This is an encore discussion with Carol Peterson and me, speaking about our hormones and focusing in on progesterone for females as well as males. So listen, learn, enjoy, and we'll be back next week with a new show of Take Charge of Your Health.
Hi! This is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, physician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back, welcome back. I'm here today with my favorite co-host,
Carol Peterson.
Hi, Carol. So today we're going to talk about one of our favorite subjects. And what's that?
Well, my favorite subject is hormones. Is that yours too?
It sure is. It sure is. We've been talking about hormones for years. As a matter of fact, that's how we met. We met talking about hormones. And so often, when we think of hormones, we think of them as sex hormones. Dr. Majid Ali said something, I'll never forget it. I've repeated it I don't know how many times, but it's so appropriate. He said they should have never been named sex hormones, because once they were named sex hormones, they could be pushed off aside. They could be unnecessary. Well, we don't need large sex drives. Or they could be giggled about or talked about, but never dealt with as the messengers for every single cell in our body that they are. They are the connectors. They are the chemicals that instruct all the cells in our body to action, and in each cell, different actions. Different cells respond at a higher level to different hormones. One of the highest amounts of receptors in the body for hormones is the brain. So Carol and I want to do a whole series on hormones, but today we're going to look at one specific hormone, and we're going to focus it in a different light, in a different angle. Although, we will understand by the end of the hour how this hormone affects and regulates our sexual glands. More importantly, we're going to be looking at our brain and how it affects our brain, how it affects our immunity, how hormones are one of the most important pillars in healing. Wherever we see healing protocols, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum has a protocol called SHINE, and that's sleep, hormones, infections and inflammation, nutrition, and exercise. And he says very directly that you leave any one of those spokes out of the wheel and you're not going to have a complete healing. Dr. Schallenberger, the same, he has 10 pillars of healing. And he says that you have to approach these simultaneously because you will never get a true healing unless part of that healing is a balancing of your hormones. Dr. Uzi Rice said very directly, and I quote, many women today are never in hormonal balance at any age. A woman who is hormonally imbalanced at 25 usually continues that way throughout menopause and perimenopause unless she gets proper help. And then he continues by saying, for many women, unhealthy aging is primarily a hormonal issue. Pretty powerful, isn't it? But a recent article contradicts all that.
Well, as of December 12th, the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force recommends against using hormone replacement therapy, which is estrogen alone or combined with progestin, for primary prevention of chronic conditions. This is in spite of all those things you just noted, Corinne. They took those recommendations by looking at the Women's Health Initiative study, which used Premarin and Prempro, pregnant mare's urine for Premarin. The Prempro part included medroxyprogesterone as a progestant, not progesterone.
What's the difference?
A big difference. These hormones were never found in human bodies until we started putting them in pills and getting people to swallow them. Premarin, some people even say, is natural, but it's natural to
horses.
Only horses. Once I talked to a drug company representative who was a trainer for Premarin, and he said this. I thought this was so interesting how it evolved. First, they used pregnant women's urine, and then that was too expensive, so we switched to baboons. And then that was too expensive, so they switched to horses. So there's nothing in those decisions that have anything to do about human physiology. It's all about the money, the economics of the situation. Of course, horses have big bladders, lots of urine, etc. So those hormones that are in the horse's urine are not equivalent. There's a few that are, but the rest aren't. They're not equivalent to what our body makes. So you're loading the body with foreign hormones.
And there's another piece of that, is that they don't break down. The body has no ability to break these down. So what happens is they go into the body, they connect onto the receptor sites, onto the breast, onto the uterus, and the body needs to break them down. So it concentrates them and concentrates them and concentrates them, making them stronger and stronger until 13 weeks, they're not broken down completely, and in 13 weeks, they're out of the body. It takes 13 weeks, whereas your own hormones have a day, 13-hour half-life.
I don't know what you're citing for the 13 weeks, but early on I saw a study where they gave one Premarin tablet to women and then measured equiline sulfate. This is one of the estrogen-like hormones that horses produce that's in that Premarin. And maybe that's where you got the 13 weeks, because I believe that was the time frame when the study ended, and they still measured, traveling around in the blood, equiline sulfate. Now, what's staggering to me are there are women out there who've taken Premarin for decades. What does that do to have all this estrogen floating around that your body really can't get rid of properly? So it's a scary situation. So now we have our government, in its wisdom, telling us not to depend on hormone therapies for primary prevention of chronic conditions. So I think we should go on and discuss the hormone of the day and start talking about some of the things that we should know about this hormone and why it is important to make sure we have enough of it.
Can we also begin by just making a comparison between a natural hormone versus Premarin per se, which clings to progesterone receptor sites but has exactly the opposite effect, can be a vasoconstrictor, can create headaches, it can aggravate agitation.
Hormone receptors, whether it's a specific physical site or it's the end product of multiple reactions in your body, are very specific for the shape of the hormone. And we're specifically talking about the hormones right now that our body makes from cholesterol. These include the hormones from the adrenal glands primarily and the so-called sex hormones. That specific shape is needed to fit into the receptor to get the exact response you want. It's been some years now. Let me just introduce this hormone. We're going to be talking about progesterone, which is one of my favorite hormones. Progesterone is the hormone that from mid-cycle to the end cycle goes up in very high levels. That's called the luteal phase. And that allows your body to prepare for an implantation of a fertilized egg in the endometrium. But in the first part of the cycle, progesterone's also produced, but it's produced by the adrenal glands. So it's there all the time in some amount. That amount that's produced by the adrenal glands would be the same amount that men would have all the time as well. They have some from the testes, very little, but for men, progesterone is mainly produced by the adrenal glands. In women, both. And women sort of have an advantage to have this huge amount of progesterone available to them. If you do get pregnant, that amount of progesterone goes up like 200 times. One of the things I'm often asked is, how much is too much progesterone? And I have to answer that question. We don't know how to get enough progesterone into you to get what your body would produce when you're pregnant. So before we can talk about toxicity of progesterone, we have to talk about levels that are above that met by a woman during a pregnancy.
Very often I see young women who come in who suffer so dreadfully. They have headaches, insomnia, breast pain to the point where it's even painful to get dressed, severe pain when their periods come, doubled over there. It's difficult for them to get up, sometimes even vomiting during the first part of their cycle as it begins. I see that, and it's not that unusual. But what I find and what I'm finding in their blood test is that they suffer from severe luteal phase progesterone suppression. Their body isn't really kicking in the amount of progesterone to balance them during their cycle, during their monthly cycle.
That's really interesting because we have known about this for almost six decades. Dr. Katarina Dalton wrote a book called Once a Month, and she is the one who coined the term premenstrual syndrome with the symptoms that you just mentioned, Corinne.
They're called PMS.
PMS. So she suffered herself. She had severe, severe headaches. And she got to thinking, as a medical school student, about what was happening in that part of the menstrual cycle. And she thought maybe progesterone would be a key. And she worked with one of her endocrinologist teachers, and they decided to try progesterone on her and then some of the patients that came to the hospital she worked at. And so they used rather large doses of progesterone, and lo and behold, the symptoms disappeared once women got that huge amount of progesterone. This was the basis, actually, of the pharmacy where I work, Women's International Pharmacy. We started out with a PMS clinic compounding with capsules to provide large doses of progesterone for PMS. And it worked very, very well for quite a few women. Symptoms would just disappear. And sometimes women had to take extra. We had breakthrough doses. We had capsules. We had suppositories. We had lozenges, rectal solutions, any which way to get progesterone into the body. And those symptoms would be gone. Katarina Dalton, I believe, deserves to be noted as the person who really brought awareness to the issue of women's health. We have different bodies. We have different cycles. We have different hormone needs. And she focused in on this. She was so successful. One of the things that happens when you don't have enough progesterone, during the luteal phase, you can become enraged, anxious. And she actually did a study in the prisons. She was in England and found that women who were in prison for acts of violence were short of progesterone during the second part of their cycle.
She was also able to correlate many of their acts of violence to that phase of the month when they were experiencing the side effects of low progesterone. But I'd like to explain what natural progesterone is and what are progestins, because many women who experience these sensations, these feelings, the first thing that happens is they're put on birth control pills. It often suppresses symptoms, but it's not dealing with the problem at all. And in severe cases, they're put on antidepressants. And that is also not dealing with the problem at all.
Right. And it's so easy to fix with sufficient progesterone. And we have it available now. I'd like to just recall a little bit about where progesterone came from. And in the original derivation of progesterone, and even for a long time in France, the progesterone that they used was extracted from human placenta because it carries a lot of progesterone during pregnancy, as I said. So they would just extract it. And then finally, they found that they could take a steroid, a portion of a molecule from plants, or actually they can do it from animal cholesterol too, but the plant source became more efficient to use. And they recreate the same molecule, progesterone, using a steroid base that came extracted from a plant. A lot of plants can be used this way. The most popular ones that we know of are soy and yam. You see this all over the place. But it's not the soy and it's not the yam. It is you extract this little piece of molecule and then you make adjustments in a lab to make it the exact molecule. As we talked about before, these molecules have to be the right shape to fit the receptors and produce the action that you're looking for.
And also, the body is able to take them in and break them down as needed. And that's always amazing. Do you remember years ago, Carol, when people just became aware of progesterone? And they used to talk about the fact that it came from a wild yam. So all these wild yam creams were created and people were rubbing on creams made of wild yam and to get their progesterone up. Do you remember that?
Yeah. And if you actually measured, you weren't getting your progesterone
at all.
But you actually had somewhat of a benefit. The wild yam extracts on its own are adrenal adaptogens. Recall that I said progesterone is also produced by the adrenals. So it was helping in that direction, but not actually giving you a source of actual progesterone. There are many over-the-counter products now that contain progesterone, and it'll say on the label that progesterone is there, usually 15 or 30 milligrams per dose. And when we compound, we use much higher doses of progesterone than in those over-the-counter ones. But depending on the severity of the problem, sometimes an over-the-counter product is good enough.
I have found that progesterone, with women having panic attacks or with anxiety, I've found that progesterone can be powerful in a cream or even orally, where people carry the cream with them, or drops. I like drops, where you put drops under your tongue until the anxiety goes away. And I see that regularly. I also see in blood tests where women come in and they say, I'm estrogen dominant. I have too much estrogen. And I take their blood test. They don't have too much estrogen. They don't have barely any estrogen. They have no progesterone. So there's no balance here. So they feel they are estrogen dominant, but at a very suppressed level for all the hormones across the board. Usually when we're dealing with hormones, we're dealing with symphonies. And these symphonies have their parts that they play. And there is a conductor. And that conductor is us, is our brain, is our food intake, is the way our insulin is balanced, which creates a totally different relationship within the body of our hormones and the balance of our hormones.
Well, let me just pick up what you said about the brain, because progesterone is not only produced by the sex organs and the adrenal glands, it's also produced independently in your brain. It's such an important hormone. And what it can do is take care of some of these mood things. Now, progesterone has receptors all over the body, and some effects may take longer than others. But back in the days when we had those really severe PMSers, and they would have extreme headache or even be suicidal, or the situation you brought up, Corinne, where they have panic attacks.
Yes.
You could use a generous amount of progesterone and you could see relief in 20 minutes.
That's what I was talking about.
Yes.
That's what I would see. I would have people carry high-dose progesterone creams around with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the panic attack would begin, what would happen would be they would start using it regularly throughout the day and before bed, and they'd wake up in the middle of the night and use it, and they'd continue to use it, and then they would use it less, and they would use it less, and then they would use it on a regular dose once or twice a day. So what was happening is their body was sensitizing to it and balancing itself. So you didn't need to be using it all day long, all evening long, all night long, that your body accepted it and became saturated to the degree that it needed to be to feel the balance. And along with that, though, I always gave magnesium. But I want to talk about that progesterone allows the body, it acts as a neurotransmitter in the brain for men and women. And it allows the body, the brain, to accept GABA. And GABA is one of our most calming, focused neurotransmitters. So you're going to have difficulty focusing without adequate progesterone, and you're not going to uptake the GABA, the neurotransmitter GABA, as well into your neurons if you don't have progesterone. You've got a circle there, each one blocking the other, and all supported by magnesium.
That's right, and throw B6 in there. We had a
series. Oh, I just toss it right in.
Both of those should be there to help metabolize the progesterone. Now, while we're talking about the brain, there's another hormone, allopregnanolone, which is made from progesterone. It's even stronger than progesterone as far as some of these effects. Now, it will vary from person to person how much allopregnanolone is made from progesterone. But if you actually do get sleepy when you're using progesterone, it's from the allopregnanolone. Not everybody gets sleepy, but it can help you sleep because it's calmative and allows you to sleep, calms down your brain. And one of the interesting things about progesterone, this is what Michael Platt wrote a book about adrenaline, and we had him on the show.
Oh, yes, we did.
Maybe about a year ago.
I'd love to get him back.
Yes, we should. Nobody really talks about adrenaline. We all know it's the fight or flight hormone, like your adrenals put out all this energy through adrenaline. But if you don't need all that adrenaline all the time, how is your body supposed to stop it? And this manifests, as Dr. Platt was saying, it manifests itself as these hyper situations, ADD, ADHD, those kind of things. Even in children, it's a sign that there is not enough progesterone to balance that excess of adrenaline. So, strangely enough, when I talk to physicians, pediatricians don't think they need to look at hormones in children. But I say, I beg to differ, because we have so much of these diagnoses with children being stressed and they're lacking that calmative effect of progesterone. One of the things that has come up is traumatic brain injury. We've now learned, after many, many years of ignoring the hormone connection, that when the head is damaged, the pituitary gland and sometimes the hypothalamus too, which are the prime directors of the creation of these hormones, when those glands are damaged, we fail to make enough hormones. So we learned this from soldiers being hit with things imploding and their helmets damaging their heads. However, this occurs all the time. It can be a birth trauma. It can be kids playing and hitting their heads, falling down. It can be playing sports. It can be car accidents. And we're failing to look for hormone deficits in those younger people. And these hormones that affect the brain, like progesterone does majorly, are being ignored in that younger pediatric population. We should be looking.
I think that that's the way we began the show. In that we began the show by saying that these are not only sex hormones. These are entire body neurosteroids, and they need to be considered on all levels of health. And we also started the show by saying that until we look at that balance, true health cannot be achieved. So it's very interesting that this article came out today when we had planned to speak about this, or this week when we had planned to speak about this, saying that hormones should not be used for baseline treatment of chronic diseases. Well, then what should we do about osteoporosis? Maybe we should just utilize Fosamax, which we know toxifies the bone. We know makes the bone more brittle. When we can use progesterone, natural progesterone, and stimulate the bone-building cells, the osteoclasts, and see changes in the bone density, it is amazing to see a 60-year-old woman, 66-year-old woman come in and say, there's nothing I can do about my osteoporosis. And we watch her bone density, natural, real bone, increase by 9% in a year and a half with administering proper hormones to balance her body.
Mm-hmm. I've gotten that kind of feedback, too.
It's pretty stunning. Remarkable. And so, no, we really shouldn't use this. We should use chemical bases. What should we use in traumatic brain injury where we're using progesterone immediately right after the incident to bring down the swelling and to nourish the neurons so the damage, you know, the damage is can be, not always, but can be progressive. So what you see right now is an injury, but the damage continues even after the insult or the injury has happened.
Uh-huh.
But when you're using progesterone, you're in another ball game because you're protecting those neurons.
Let's just talk about libido for a second.
Oh, I love it. Now let's get back to the sex hormones.
but we're human beings, and sex drive is a sign of health. It really is. And when your hormones decline, and progesterone's not the only one, but it has a part to play in libido. I was reading some time ago that DHEA in women, another adrenal hormone, is a real pivotal one, but very few people know, and this work was done by Dr. Norman Shealy, that progesterone increases the DHEA too from the adrenals. So we have this action and reaction with hormones. None of the hormones work all by themselves, so you have to take that into consideration. So I would consider loss of libido a chronic health situation. And we have so many jokes about that, and we have so much acceptance and so much of the medical profession telling people, if they dare to ask about it, oh, you're getting old and you should expect that. No, you shouldn't settle for less
than a full life?
Operation of your body. This is shocking to me.
And disappointing. And unnecessary, because with a full understanding of hormones and how they balance each other and how you can use them for balance, guess what? We can have it all. Just like Dr. Reese said, when people start complaining about aging, what they're really complaining about, what they're focusing, what is really happening is that they're in hormonal imbalance, that hormones don't stop aging, but as we age, they maintain the highest quality of life possible. We know that people with autoimmune disease, when we take their blood test, their DHEA is close to non-existent. We also understand that very, very often, with multiple other factors, when we bring up their DHEA, they can function at a much higher level. And very often, we can reduce the symptoms of the disease by boosting up and pushing up that DHEA. And I see that particularly in lupus. Lupus just sucks up that DHEA and just wants it higher and higher doses, and people get better. And
well,
I see it all the time.
FDA approved drug now, 200 milligrams of DHEA daily for specifically lupus, but it also applies to other autoimmune diseases across the board, as you just mentioned.
So utilizing hormones in this way in males and in females, you know, nobody's immune to hormone suppression. Nobody's immune to it. We are all experiencing it, and we all experience the effects of it. And creating balances, male and female, is where we want to go for a higher level of health. It's one of the spokes. If we're not well, we're not going to get well completely until we deal with all pieces of the puzzle. And one of those pieces of the puzzle is hormone balance.
I'd like to talk about something that's really an irritant about progesterone for many years. And I finally heard a doctor speak out about this. We have been told over and over and over again that women who have had a hysterectomy, their uterus removed, do not need progesterone. Progesterone is a hormone during the luteal phase, builds up, the endometrial lining has been built up, and progesterone allows it to slough off. So if you don't have any uterus, you don't need progesterone.
Exactly.
However,
you hear that all the time.
I cannot believe all these doctors sit on committees, Endocrine Society, North American Menopause Society, and they spew out this statement over and over and over again, completely ignoring the fact that there are progesterone receptors all over your body. And then progesterone has a synergy of with estrogen. Your estrogen simply will not work as well as it should with no progesterone on board, because the receptors for estrogen are sensitized by progesterone. So there's lots of data out there that these poor women with their uterus removed and often given estrogen, and they've already had their uterus removed because they had excess estrogen and they had fibroids and they were bleeding, or something of that effect is why they had the uterus removed, too much estrogen. So they take out the organ that is damaged and leave you in an unbalanced state forevermore. I think it's simply horrendous. And again, Dr. Dalton, 5 decades ago, she said not only should women with a hysterectomy have progesterone, they need even more progesterone because they're so imbalanced that they went to the severity of having that organ removed. They need more progesterone than the woman who didn't have that organ removed.
That's so very similar to what Dr. Reese said. And he said that the imbalance maintains itself. A surgery removing the organ doesn't shift the imbalance. The imbalance has to be balanced through hormonal balancing, through diet, through lifestyle, through B vitamins, through adequate sleep. And guess what? There's an intimate link between progesterone and thyroid hormone. The ability...
Absolutely.
The ability to utilize your thyroid hormone is very much directly dependent on progesterone, and the ability to make progesterone is dependent on your thyroid hormone. You got another circle here. Isn't it amazing what the body does? Can you give us a little clearer picture of that, Carol?
Progesterone helps thyroid function because it assists in the conversion of the relatively inactive T4 to active T3. Without progesterone, it doesn't happen.
Well, I think that's that pretty much says it. So there you are, and your thyroid is producing adequate thyroid hormone, but your body feels like it is thyroid deficient, because it's not getting a form of an active thyroid hormone, which generally the inactive or less active, it's not totally inactive, the T4 goes into the cell, and once it's in the cell, it's converted. It's converted with multiple cofactors, but the major cofactor is the progesterone. So we see that all the time. I see it all the time, that women are being treated with T4, or as we call it, Synthroid, and they never feel right. And so we do two things. I do two things. I give them traces, small doses of T3, but I also balance their progesterone and their whole body. They feel like they've come alive. It's so beautiful working with hormones on so many levels, mentally and physically. Progesterone acts as your own natural diuretic. All these women who swell up once a month, they get so swollen, their hands, their feet, that's just one of the symptoms of low progesterone, because progesterone is your body's natural diuretic.
That's one of those things that you also will see results pretty quickly when you use progesterone. And we mentioned before the swollen, painful breasts that you can get. That's a excess estrogen symptom. And you can put progesterone cream right on your breasts, and in about 20 minutes to half an hour, you can have some of that fluid actually start to recede and you become more comfortable. It's extremely exciting. One of the things, because we have these small doses and over-the-counter creams, there have been complaints with using some of those creams and that same breast tenderness. And why does that happen? That happens because, as I mentioned earlier, progesterone comes aboard, sensitizes the estrogen that's already there, and it makes that estrogen so much more potent. So when you have that situation occur, when you start a progesterone product, if you're getting more anxiety, more water retention, more headache, it means you are underdosed with progesterone. You need more. And those things can disappear if you get that more in right away. If you take extra doses, get extra doses in within an hour, so many things can disappear.
That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
So we talked a lot about our hormones, and we talked about the conductor being our brain, ourselves, our lifestyle, our bodies. But I'd like to go to some specifics, and all of these come together when we're dealing with PCOS, polycystic ovary disease. Now, the symptoms can be incredible pain on menses. It could be severe, debilitating pain. It also can be hair loss, almost like a male pattern hair loss or a receding hairline. It also can be acne on your chin, acne on your face. We're not talking about little pimples. We're talking about cystic acne that can extend all the way into your neck and back. It is not a fun disease, and it is a direct hormone imbalance. Some of it can be very much aggravated and precipitated by elevated insulin. And how do we get elevated insulin?
We have to fast.
Yes, by the way we eat. Eating carbs, by eating sugars, our insulin goes up. By eating multiple times a day, 6 times a day, 5 times a day, like we were told to. And our insulin can then rise and stay elevated throughout the day, overstimulating our bodies and overstimulating our ovaries. So let's talk about what we should do about it. Carol, you start, and I'll tell you then what I do.
Okay, so I want to say for a bit what's actually happening. And we're talking about insufficient progesterone. Now, how that happens is not quite clear. It can be part of the stress. It can be part of the glucose-insulin imbalance. But progesterone becomes deficit. Your pituitary gets on board and puts out a hormone called luteinizing hormone, or LH for short, struggling to get your body to make more progesterone. And it's not doing it. It's not doing it. But your sex organs, your ovaries, are being stimulated by that LH, and the ovaries are able to make more testosterone.
Exactly.
Exactly. So now you have a deficit of progesterone and overload of testosterone. Hence, you get the pimples, you get the hair growth, you even get a body shape that's starting to look more masculine because of that high amount of testosterone. So putting progesterone in here is a key to dampen that excessive zeal of the pituitary gland to put out so much LH. You want that to come down. And as that's coming down, because you're properly getting some signaling with the progesterone, the testosterone starts coming down. It doesn't mean that you can't ignore that insulin glucose thing.
No,
and it doesn't mean that it also doesn't mean that you can ignore the low thyroid piece of this too. That is an issue as well. And as we just talked about before, the thyroid function seems to be diminished. So you need the progesterone to help that out, and it's not there. So it's a multi-system hormone imbalance. And the shocking thing with all of this is it is rampant in college-age students, and it's a cause of infertility. It's a major, major cause of infertility. Now, I heard something very interesting at a conference, and although the name polycystic ovary disease doesn't apply to men, they can have that same constellation of imbalance. And the presenter said, young men who are losing their hair, premature balding, is a big symptom of this same constellation of imbalances as women have when they have PCOS.
It's very interesting, an interesting thought. Now, what do I do if women come in? First of all, it's become much more prevalent. It used to be that only obese women walking in my door would be diagnosed with PCOS and very often infertility. But that's not the case now. Even slim women are coming in with PCOS because their bodies are so overstimulated. You know, it is not, we were not made to have severe pain monthly. It's not natural. If you're having severe pain monthly, this is not natural. This is not just what we accept and it's just a part of us being a woman. Not at all. Don't accept it. Get help. Well, one of the things that if you went to standard doctors, the first thing they'll do is they'll put you on metformin.
Uh-huh.
And what does metformin do? It lowers your insulin level. Well, I do that very similarly through diet and through healthy diet, through lowering carbs, giving lots and lots of vegetables, giving some powerful antioxidants in berries and in pomegranates, but a very directed insulin-lowering protocol. Very powerful. And I also support that with herbs and nutrients, with chromium, with vanadium, with bitter melon, cinnamon extracts, and berberine. All of these have been shown to bring down blood sugar and to support lower insulin. So we've started the patient out and we've begun with diet. As we're adding that on, we have now sent out tests for thyroid, and we're also doing a very high dosing of progesterone in the second half of the cycle. So we start mid-cycle and heavily dose progesterone, and I generally like creams, and I heavily dose them all the way to the menses and through the menses. Now, I've had women that haven't been able to get pregnant at all and have come to me, and they end up losing some weight because they were overweight. And in the middle of this protocol, they've gotten pregnant. And there's nothing toxic in this protocol, nothing at all. And that's the exciting part of it, is that people are getting healthier. There is the other, so that's one side of the equation where what is happening through our lifestyle, one piece of our hormone is being surged up, elevated, the testosterone. But what I see even more often than that are women who have been on birth control pills for years and years and years. And I take their hormone profile. And if I didn't see the age on the top of their blood test, I could look at this profile and say, "Oh, look at this, a postmenopausal woman in her 70s. And this is a 35, 40-year-old young woman." Pretty.
Well, you're testing for the hormones that aren't there.
Exactly.
Birth control pills suppress your own production. You introduce foreign hormones, which you're not measuring, but it suppressed your real hormones by its existence there. So if somebody's on birth control pills, you don't even need to bother because the tests aren't testing for those foreign hormones.
No, but even after, 7 months later, eight months later, I still see that same profile. And
people don't recover. They absolutely don't recover.
No, they don't. Not, maybe in years, but not immediately, not within 1 year, not within 2 years, not within 1 year, they do not recover. You are right. And so that is something to look at. You know, we have a whole industry now, a multi-billion dollar industry called fertility clinics. And where did they come from?
Because we can't reproduce.
Because we can't reproduce. And there's a couple of reasons. One is that we ignore our biological clock. We pretend like it doesn't exist. And number two is we really are not dealing with our hormones and nurturing our body to create hormones. Some of that has to do with, one, I said it first, the way we eat and balancing the way we eat to allow our body to balance itself with insulin and create a correct hormone balance with correct nutrients. The other is sleep, adequate sleep. We need that. We need that sleep to be able to balance our hormones and to release melatonin, which acts as a balancer of our hormones. We also need exercise, important to stimulate our muscles, and we need to look at any type of infections and inflammation to create balance. Carol, we're coming to the end. We've come to the end, actually.
I love talking about hormones, and there's so much. It's the tip of the iceberg. I just wanted to add one more thing. I mentioned about the young men losing their hair. I'm appalled, and I've talked to hairdressers all over the place. Women are losing their hair.
Oh,
and
yes.
Progesterone is a piece of this, too. If they don't have enough progesterone, you can't create luxuriant hair. And this is in part tied into the thyroid function. You need thyroid functioning for good, healthy hair. No progesterone support, no thyroid activity, no hair. And when I go in public and I see these poor women with
young women
thinning, and you can see through their hair, no matter how cleverly their hairdresser is trying to work with it, it has become a huge, huge problem. Hair is a big issue. We're talking about chronic disease. Losing your hair is a chronic disease, in my opinion.
Thanks so much, Carol. It's always a pleasure, and I always learn.
Me too.
And we'll be back next week. Next week is the week before Christmas, so we'll be talking about Christmas things next week. But we will continue this series on hormones, looking at them, examining them in a way, hopefully, you've never thought of or heard before. We'll be back next week. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.